law in this town. We've got our own police in Vermissa. We don't need any imported goods.
Especially not the paid tools of the mine owners.
Well, well. John McMurdo.
You know me, copper?
Oh, I know a Chicago killer when I see one. I was on the force there before I came to this damn coal bunker. We couldn't make anything stick back then. Perhaps I'll be luckier here.
Now, page 534. Yes. Second column, word 13. There. Much more promising.
Seven.
Seven. Is, there is.
36. What? What does it say?
There is danger.
Bring in the candidate. Unbind his hands. Leave his side. John McMurdo, are you already a member of the Ancient Order of Freemen?
I am.
Your lodge?
Lodge 29, Chicago.
Dark nights are unpleasant.
Yes, for strangers to travel.
The clouds are heavy.
Yes, a storm is approaching.
Are the brethren satisfied?
Aye!
Brother McMurdo, we know by sign and countersign that you are indeed one of us. But in this county, and in other counties of these parts, we have certain rights and duties of our own. Are you ready to be tested?
I am.
Are you of stout heart?
I am of stout heart.
Can you bear pain?
As well as any man.
Test him.
I can take more than that.
Remove the hood.
John McMurdo looked down at his right arm. There, on the flesh of the forearm, a wisp of smoke still rising from it, was a clear-cut circle with a triangle within it, deep and red, the brand mark of the Scourers.
It's done.
It's done. Read it back, Doctor.
There is danger. Confidence is pressing. Douglas. Rich country man, Burlston House. Burlston.
What do you think of pure reason and its fruits? If the greengrocer has such a thing as a laurel wreath, I'd send Mrs. Hudson round to fetch it.
It's a pretty curt sort of message.
Oh, he's done remarkably well. When you've only got a single column to choose words from, you're bound to have to leave something to the intelligence of your reader, which fortunately was well up to the task. Some devil is planned against a Mr. Douglas, a rich country gentleman of Burlston House. Burlston.
Whatever that is. Confidence is pressing.
Oh, really, Watson, you're supposed to have a way with words. Porlock's confident that the danger's pressing. Confidence was the best he could do.
Well, can we find this Douglas and save him?
Of course we can. Ah, hello, a visitor.
A client?
Oh, that ring had an unmistakable touch to it. That's all right, Mrs. Hudson. The gentleman knows the way.
Who is it?
You're an early bird, Mr. Mack.
Ah.
I wish you luck with your worm. Come in, come in.
Good morning to you, Mr. Holmes. Doctor.
Inspector McDonald.
I fear this means there's some mischief afoot.
Oh, now if you'd said hope instead of fear, it'd be nearer the truth, I'm thinking.
Cigarette, Inspector?
No, I won't smoke, thank you. I must be pushing on my way. The early hours of a case are the precious ones, as you both know full well. But...
Mr. Mack, what's wrong?
This note. Man, this is witchcraft.
Hardly there.
Mr. Holmes, where did you get this?
Why, what's amiss with it?
Amiss with it? Douglas at Burlston House?
Do you know him?
Well, I'd hardly say I know him, Doctor. Jack Douglas. He bought the manor house in Burlston in Sussex some 10 years back. An American gentleman.
Brother John McMurdo, in the name of Lodge 341, Vermissa Valley, I welcome you to its privileges and debates. Do you stand by your oaths of fidelity and secrecy?
I do so stand.
Well, we must get a warning to him. He's in danger.
I'm sorry, Mr. Holmes, we can't do that.
Why not, man?
And do you accept the penalty for disloyalty and disobedience?
I do. If I should break my vow to my brothers, may I be hunted down across this country or any other and put to a most deserving and inevitable death.
Why not? Because he was horribly murdered late last night. That's why not.
So it is sworn.
Aye!
I want to know exactly how you came by this note.
Well, actually, Watson wrote it.
So to your dictation, Holmes.
True enough. We decoded it, Mr. Mac. Here's the original.
Ah, a secret code, is it? Well, it seems to me I can have the case cleared up in no time. All I have to do is lay my hands on the man who sent you this.
And how do you propose to do that?
I was rather assuming you'd tell me.
I have no idea who he is or how to contact him.
I thought you sent him money.
On occasion. Posted to Camberwell Post Office.
And you've never troubled to see who called for the letters?
When he first got in touch with me, I gave him my word that I wouldn't try to trace him.
You give your word to a criminal?
It wasn't the first time, and it won't be the last.
Oh, Mr.
Holmes. But this is all beside the point. It's the man behind Paul Locke you should be after.
The man behind him?
The man responsible for your murder.
Well, who is he?
His name is Moriarty.
Oh.
I've never heard of him.
Maybe not, Doctor, but I have.
Ah, so he's known to the police.
Oh, aye, he's known right enough. Professor James Moriarty is one of the most respected academics in the country. He has honorary doctorates from Oxford and Cambridge. He writes books that no one else in the world can understand, and he lectures in mathematics.
A perfect cover.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, I really don't want to go through all this again.
Moriarty is behind this murder.
Following the ceremony of initiation, drinks were produced and strong liquor flowed freely. All were anxious to raise a glass to this new brother, who stood firm before policemen and never flinched under the branding iron. They rolled back their sleeves and compared their marks and shared their stories. All had gone through the test, though few as bravely as young John McMurdo.
First item on the agenda, the pension to Jim Carnaway's widow. Brother Treasurer?
Bodymaster, the companies have all been generous lately. Hey, Carnaway will be well looked after.
Yeah. Very good. Item two. I've had a request from Lodge 249, Merton County. They've a job to be done, too sensitive for the local brothers. The target is Andrew Ray, manager of Ray and Sturmash, co-owner...
Eminent Bodymaster!
Brother Scanlon.
With all respect, I know Merton County. Ray and Sturmash is just a two-man company.
What of it?
If we kill this man, Charlie Sturmash will sell up and move out. And then it'll be just like the others. One of the big companies from New York or Philadelphia will buy up the mine. If we carry on like this, soon there won't be any small firms left.
Bloody good riddance.
But we can't control the big companies. They're just too powerful.
We can control any size company. I'll not have any yellow scaremongering in this lodge, Scanlon. Either you stand with us or you go the same way as Donegan and Williams last year. Choose.
We stand with the lodge.
See that you do. Or it'll be your name on the agenda one of these days. Lodge 249 asks for two men. Brother Cormac.
Bass.
Brother Wilson.
Bodymaster.
If you need another man,
I take it as an honor to be chosen.
They ask for two, McMurdo. Two is what they'll get.
Item three. There's one man in this town that wants trimming up. James Stanger, editor of the Herald. Have you read this, brothers? Reign of Terror in the Coal and Iron District. A criminal organization in our midst.
Kill him!
It's what he deserves. But there'd be more trouble than we need just now. I want him warned, not killed. Brother Baldwin.
Boss.
You can fix it.
My pleasure. I'll take three men. Mansell, O'Brien, Willoughby.
And McMurdo.
McMurdo?
That's my ruling.
Hey! Oh, my
God! Hold it
off! Help! Help!
No!
Help!
Stanger! This'll teach you to print your damn lies, eh? Call me a trimmer, eh?
Will you? Easy, man. Hold me for the love of God.
Shut him up.
That's enough.
Keep out of this.
That's enough, I said.
Get your hands off me, you damn traitor.
Stand away from him, Baldwin, or I'll blow your face off.
By God, you are a traitor.
For God's sakes, hurry yourselves! The street's awake!
Go on, lads! Scatter!
All right, now, lads!
Ted! Come on, man!
I'm coming!
McMurdo, don't think that this is over.
Now, Inspector. Give us the facts.
Mr. Jack Douglas was found dead just before midnight last night. Extensive injuries to the head. No arrest has been made. Those are the main points from the official report.
What about the unofficial report?
Now, what makes you think there is one?
Oh, come on, Mr. Mac. It takes a lot more than that to bring you round to Baker Street.
Aye, Doctor. You're quite right. Here you are, gentlemen. A private note from the local man, White Mason. Very reliable. Mr. Holmes.
Mac, don't waste a second. Extraordinary features, perplexing details. Bring Mr. Holmes and Dr. Watson if you can. This case is a snorter.
Counselor McGinty, this is an honor.
I'm not usually much of a visitor, but I thought I'd stretch a point. I hear you pulled a gun on Brother Baldwin last night.
I did, and I'd do it again. Where I come from, the orders of a bodymaster are to be obeyed without question. Baldwin was set to murder the man.
He called you a damn traitor.
And at any other time, I'd have killed him for it. But it was more important to get the man away and protect the lodge.
You did the right thing. I'm grateful.
Freeze the pair of you!
What's the meaning of this, Marvin?
I thought you'd be getting into trouble, Mr. Crooked McMurdo. You're coming with us.
What am I being accused of?
This man is a friend of mine. I'll answer for his conduct.
Is that so? Well, Mr. McGinty, you may have to answer for your own conduct one of these days. Give me a pistol, McMurdo.
There. But I'll ask you again, Captain. What is it you think I've done?
You were involved in the beating of old Stanger at the Herald office last night.
Drop this now, Marvin. Save yourself a deal of trouble.
What's that supposed to mean?
This man was with me in my saloon last night. We played poker till first light. And I can bring a dozen witnesses to prove it.
Not guilty.
Yes!
Brother McMurdo, take a drink of that.
Thanks. To poker! That's a fine drop of whiskey.
My own stock.
I'm honored. My thanks to you, bodymaster.
The lodge protects its own.
It was a lucky thing old Stanger didn't get a better look at us.
He shouldn't have got any sort of look. Baldwin should have doused the lamp first thing.
He's getting careless.
You're sure that's all he is? You sure you didn't want us to be seen? Some of us, at least.
Careful, McMurdo. It's not your place to question a brother's loyalty.
Counselor, if a brother calls me traitor, then I can return the favor.
Is that what they say in Chicago?
It's what I say.
I do have some information on the murdered man. This Douglas was something of a local hero. Pulled a man out of a burning building when everyone else had given up.
What's his household?
Him and his wife. Just a few servants.
And he's an American, you say?
Well, that's what I'm told.
Mrs. Douglas, too?
No, she's a local lady. Quite the beauty, it seems. And a fair bit younger than her husband.
Who discovered the body?
A house guest, Mr. Cecil Barker.
Do you know anything about him?
Well, he's often there, apparently.
A friend of Mr. Douglas? Or his wife?
I see what you're thinking, Doctor, but it was Mr. Douglas he was close to. A friend from the old days, in the Californian goldfields, so they say.
Surprise!
What the hell? Etty! My God, Etty!
For pity's sake, John!
You shouldn't go sneaking up on a body like that.
I wanted to see you.
And I try and strangle you. Oh, come here, my darling. Let me make it up to you.
Why were you so scared of me?
Sure, I was thinking of other things. Come on, come here.
John!
Now, come on. Make your heart easy. Let me see you smile.
How can I be easy when I know you're one of them? A criminal!
We're just poor men trying to get our rights.
Give it up, John. I beg you.
I can't break my oath. I can't desert my comrades.
Not even for me?
Not even for you.
Burlstone Manor, gentlemen.
Thank you.
That's not a house, it's a fortress.
Aye, that's the word for it.
Jacobean.
Built on the ruins of something much older. Probably 11th century. That really would have been a fortress.
This is enough of one for me. A moat and a drawbridge. Wonderful.
That drawbridge still works. Is she in the oil on the chain?
Not from here, no.
It's on the winding gears, almost new. Interesting.
This Mr. Douglas valued his security. Jacobean, you say?
Yes, why?
Oh, I was just thinking. This house has seen 3 centuries of births and homecomings, and country dances and hunts and happiness.
Thank you, Watson.
And now, in its old age, this tragedy. Mind you, it's a fit setting for a murder. Silent as a churchyard and dark as a tomb.
Beautifully put. You'll probably double the circulation of the Strand magazine.
Mr. MacDonald?
Oh, wait, Mason.
Gentlemen, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Oh, Dr. Watson. I hope we'll all have a place in the book when the time comes, eh? Mr. Holmes?
Mr. White Mason?
Oh, this is something after your own heart, gentlemen. A snorter. A real snorter.
Dear God.
He was found in exactly this position.
Yes, sir, he was. We moved the gun, but that were all.
Where exactly was the gun?
Across his chest.
Excuse me.
Yes. It was a double-barrel shotgun.
It was.
One barrel wouldn't have been enough to destroy that much of the skull. You agree, Watson?
Yes, I'm afraid I do.
2 barrels fired at very close range, full in the face. The angle of the shots is almost vertical. Powder burns on his dressing gown.
Are you sure this was murder, Inspector?
Details. That's what's important in this life. You get the details right, the rest will take care of itself.
Don't ever get tired of the sound of your own voice, McMurdo.
Not half as tired as I do of yours, Baldwin.
That's enough. Brother Baldwin, get back to your beer. Brother McMurdo, a word.
I'm beginning to have my doubts, Doctor. White Mason,
I hope you've not brought us down here for nothing.
I don't think so. Though it's true that everyone's first thought was for suicide. Mr. Barker, Ames the butler, the housekeeper.
And what about Mrs. Douglas? What was her reaction when she saw the body?
She didn't. Mr. Barker managed to stop her before she could come in here.
Indeed. You're about to tell us the evidence for murder.
I want an end to this business between you and Baldwin.
We're all at each other's throats just in the minute. That mess up with the Steve Bird job didn't help.
Bird was warned. He must have been warned. Too many jobs have been going wrong lately. We might have a squealer.
Not necessarily. That new captain's too sharp for his own good.
Maybe.
You want him taken care of?
It's too risky.
This is a war. There's always going to be risks.
I didn't bring you in here for a lecture, McMurdo.
Then why did you?
There's a job for you. And for you alone. I'll not have this one fail.
What's the job?
Have a look at this.
Was the window open like that when the body was found?
Nothing's been touched, Mr. Holmes. We may not be Scotland Yard, but we know how to preserve a crime scene.
Not being Scotland Yard's a distinct advantage.
Must not Holmes.
Is that blood?
Yes, a partial footprint, man's boot.
It seemed to me that someone stepped on the sill as he climbed out the window.
But aren't we directly above the moat?
Yes, we are. What else is there?
Well, Mr. Barker is adamant that the gun isn't from this house. The butler, too.
May I see the weapon?
I had to move it so the local doctor could examine the body. The barrels have been sawn off short. Never seen that before. Here.
Yes, American practice makes it easier to conceal. The triggers have been wired together. Pull one and both cartridges fire.
There's a maker's monogram.
Hmm? Oh, yes. P-E-N.
Well, it means nothing to me, I'm afraid.
Pennsylvania Small Arms Company. Thank you. Now, what more?
This was found on the body, neatly tucked into the cord of the dressing gown.
Watson?
Thank you.
Plain white visiting card, rather cheap quality. Two words written in ink. VV341.
Chester Wilcox, chief foreman of the Iron Dyke Company. We've had two tries at him already, but no luck. Now, look here. That's his house. It's well out of earshot of any of the others.
Out of earshot?
It could be a noisy business. There's a wife and three kids, as well as the man himself. They're bound to raise a cry.
I'll pick him off at work, during the day.
No, you won't. He's expecting us to do just that. He's always on his guard.
Then you're right. At home's best. After dark.
How will you get him alone?
I won't.
Thank you, Doctor. VV.
Someone's initials?
Well, there's no VV in the village. Now, Mr. Barker says that
Mr. Barker seems to be saying quite a lot.
Well, he very naturally took charge of things.
Very naturally. Carry on. What does Mr. Barker say?
That he's never seen a card like it in the house before.
Well, it certainly wasn't written with any of these pens. No. Mr. White Mason, so far you've given us a dead man, a gun, a visiting card and a boot mark. Are they the sum total of your perplexing features and extraordinary details?
They are not, Mr. Holmes. The fatal shot was fired just before midnight. Mr. Barker heard it and rushed to this room. He swears that not 30 seconds had passed, but he saw no one but the dead man. The drawbridge was raised. The house was effectively an island. The window was open, but the moat is 40 feet wide, and there are no signs of anyone having crossed it. Even if the killer did escape that way, there were village people still about. A stranger, especially one with soaking wet clothes, would have been seen at once.
Presumably you put out a search yourself.
Straight away, Doctor. And before you ask me, Mr. Holmes, we searched the house too. Our murderer effectively disappeared into thin air.
It's not unique. Huddersfield in 76, the Folkestone slaughter in 69, half a hundred others.
I didn't say it was unique, sir. I said it was perplexing.
You said it was extraordinary. I think it needs rather more to put it into that category.
Oh, you think so, do you, Mr. Holmes? Then look at the dead man's hand. You see this ring?
Unusual design. Is that gold?
It's called a nugget ring. A fragment of pure gold ore in a plain metal band.
So that supports the story of his past life in the gold fields.
Oh, there's more to it than that, Doctor. Everyone in the house swears that Douglas always wore that ring outside his wedding ring.
What wedding ring?
The wedding ring from his first marriage. The wedding ring that Barker says meant more to him than anything else in the world. The wedding ring that never, ever left his finger.
The wedding ring that isn't there now.
Exactly. What we have here is a murderer who kills his victim, removes both his rings, carefully puts one of them back, leaves his calling card, and then vanishes into thin air.
And does it all inside the space of 30 seconds.
Now, tell me, Mr. Holmes, what manner of man can do that?
What manner of man, indeed?
Oh, that's fine. That's very fine.
In episode 1 of The Valley of Fear by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Medicine and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams. John McMurdo, Ian Glenn. Inspector MacDonald, Mark Bonner. White Mason, Timothy Bateson. Jack McGinty, Constantine Gregory. Jacob Shafter, Don McCorkindale. Etty Shafter, Amanda Gordon. Ted Baldwin, Stephen Critchlow. Mike Scanlon, Peter Gunn. Captain Marvin, Jonathan Keeble. The narrator was Ronald Pickup. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The pianist was Michael Haslam. The violinist, Abigail Young. The Valley of Fear is dramatized for radio by Bert Cools and directed by Enid Williams.
Jonathan Small.
Mahomet Singh.
Abdullah Khan.
Dost Akbar. The Four.
The Sign of the Four by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized in two parts by Bert Cools, with Clive Merrison as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. The Sign of the Four, Part 1, Timber Toe.
Sherlock Holmes took his bottle from the corner of the mantelpiece and his hypodermic syringe from its neat Morocco case. With his long, white, nervous fingers, he adjusted the delicate needle and rolled back his left shirt cuff. For some little time, his eyes rested thoughtfully upon the sinewy forearm and wrist, all dotted and scarred with innumerable puncture marks. Finally, he thrust the sharp point home and pressed down the tiny piston.
Which is it today? Morphine or cocaine?
Cocaine. 7% solution. Would you care to try it?
No, thank you.
Perhaps you're right, Watson. Yes, I suppose its influence is physically a bad one.
You suppose? If you have any doubts in the matter, I should be delighted to dispel them.
I find it so stimulating and clarifying to the mind, however, that its secondary action is a matter of small moments.
Small moment. It's a pathological and morbid process. It involves increased tissue change and leaves a permanent weakness. And you know what a black reaction comes on you afterwards. For God's sake, count the cost!
My mind rebels at stagnation. You know, give me problems, give me work, give me the most abstruse cryptogram and the most intricate analysis, and I can dispense with artificial stimulants. I crave for mental exaltation. And what do you present me with? This. A study in scarlet. Yes. Lucy was silent, but her blushing cheek and her bright, happy eyes showed only too clearly that her young heart was no longer her own. Romantic drivel.
But the romance was there. I couldn't tamper with the facts.
Well, some fact should be suppressed.
I can't believe that.
The only point in the case which deserved mention was the analytical reasoning I used to unravel it.
Oh, I see. Every line should have been about you. And you call yourself a scientific detective.
I thought this would please you. I'm sorry. I was mistaken.
Ladies and gentlemen, as I live and breathe, and I wouldn't tell you no lie now, would I? The only one in captivity, the only one ever tamed, the only one ever taken from its own heathen lands and brought into civilization. Don't alarm yourself, madam. It is securely chained up in there. Oh, yes, sir, bonds of the finest British steel. It only ever got out once. And you can all see what happened then, can't you? Oh, yes, exactly. So come on, roll up. Only a penny to see something you remember the rest of your days. Roll up, roll up. Thank you, sir, madam. Thank you. In you go. That's it, madam. In you go.
That's it. Holmes. Holmes. What is it?
I want to ask you something.
Well?
If I'm to continue as your chronicler, I want to make sure that I present your methods accurately.
Yes, good.
Observation and deduction. I've heard you say that it's difficult for a man to have any object in daily use without somehow impressing his individuality on it.
Yeah, well, give it to me, Watson.
I beg your pardon?
The object, the test piece, whatever it is. I cannot emulate the music hall mind reader. I do not work blindfolded.
Here. This has recently come into my possession. What can you tell me about its previous owner?
Well, I can tell you that his watch has prevented me from taking another dose of cocaine, as you so transparently intended it should. Yes, now. Take it. There are hardly any data.
Oh. So what about your theory?
Precision, Watson. Hardly any, not none. Subject to your correction, I should judge that the previous owner of that watch was your elder brother, a man of untidy habits, very untidy and careless. He was left with good prospects, but he threw away his chances, lived for some time in poverty with occasional short bursts of prosperity, and finally, taking to drink, he died. That is all I can gather.
This is unworthy of you, Holmes. You've made inquiries into the history of my unhappy brother, and now you pretend to have deduced the knowledge in some fanciful way. I didn't think you capable of descending to something like that.
Oh... My dear doctor, pray accept my apologies. Viewing the matter as an abstract problem, I never thought how personal and painful a thing it might be to you. I assure you that I never even knew you had a brother until you handed me that watch.
Then how did you get those facts? You were correct in every particular.
Well, the date of the watch is nearly 50 years back, and it carries the initials H.W. The W obviously suggests your own name. Your father has been dead many years, and jewelry usually descends to the eldest son. To deduce a brother is no major achievement. That the brother is no longer alive is strongly suggested by the simple fact that you are now in possession of his timepiece.
And your insights as to his character?
Well, look how the case is dented and scratched. It's marked all over. It's been kept in the same pocket as keys, coins, and other hard objects. It's no great feat to assume that only a careless man treats a 50-guinea watch in so cavalier a fashion.
The poverty?
Open it. Now, when a pawnbroker takes a watch, he scratches the number of the ticket on the inside of the case. Now, there are no less than four such numbers visible there. Inference that your brother was often at low water. Secondary inference?
And that he had occasional bouts of prosperity, or he couldn't have redeemed the pledge.
Exactly. And finally, if you look at the inner plate which contains the keyhole, use my lens.
There are more scratches. Hundreds of them.
Marks where the key has missed its target. You'll never see a drunkard's watch without them. Where's the mystery in all this?
You're right. I'm sorry. I should have more faith in your powers.
Yeah, what's the use of having powers when one has no field upon which to exert them? Oh, look out there. Was ever such a dreary, dismal, unprofitable world? What could be more hopelessly prosaic and material? Crime is commonplace. Existence is commonplace, and no qualities except those which are commonplace of any function upon earth.
But surely you...
Watson?
Good night.
See that light? That's where it is. You know what to do. Up you go, then. And be careful.
Come in, Mrs. Hudson.
Good news, sir. A client.
Oh, thank heaven.
A young lady, well-dressed and rather reserved.
I'll tell him. Please wait a moment or two, then show her up.
Yes, Doctor.
Let's hope he finds her problem interesting.
Amen.
Holmes? Holmes? A client. Holmes, I'm going to open this door. Very well.
Holmes, there's a client here. A lady. Be out here in 2 minutes.
Come in.
Miss Mary Morstan.
Ah, please come in, Miss Morstan. I am Dr. John Watson. Mr. Holmes will be here in a moment.
Good morning, Doctor.
Thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
Yes, thank you.
Please, sit down.
Thank you.
Whatever it is that's disturbing you, I'm sure that Mr. Holmes will be able to help.
You're very kind. I've come here because you and Mr. Holmes once acted for my employer, Mrs. Cecil Forrester.
Mrs. Forrester?
Of Lower Camberwell. She was much impressed by your kindness and skill.
It was a very simple case.
Miss Mary Morstan? Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
An exceedingly simple affair.
She did not think so.
Well, nonetheless.
Well, at least you cannot say the same of my problem.
Please continue, Miss Morstan.
Briefly, the facts are these. My father was an officer in the 34th Bombay Infantry.
Ah.
Dr. Watson?
The doctor has also served in India.
Oh.
Yes. Pray continue.
My mother died when I was a child, and I was sent home to England to live. I was placed in a boarding establishment in Edinburgh, and I remained there until I was 17. My father obtained 12 months' leave and came home to London, telegraphing me that he had arrived all safe and directing me to come down at once to the Langham Hotel. His message was full of kindness and love. I drove to the Langham and was informed that Captain Morstan had gone out the night before and had not returned. I waited all day, but there was no news of him. And that night, on the advice of the manager of the hotel, I communicated with the police. Their inquiries led to no result, and nothing more has been heard of my unfortunate father. He came home with his heart full of hope to find some peace, some comfort. And instead...
The date?
He disappeared upon the 3rd of December, 1878.
10 years ago?
What happened to his luggage?
It had remained at his hotel. There was nothing in it to suggest a clue. Clothes and books and a number of curiosities from the Andaman Islands.
Mm-hmm. Was that his posting?
He was one of the officers in charge there.
It's a penal colony, Holmes. Mm-hmm. Terrible place by all accounts.
So Papa used to say in his letters.
Well, had your father any friends in town?
Only one that I know of. Major Sholto, a fellow officer from the penal colony. The Major had retired some little time before and lived at Upper Norwood. I communicated with him, of course. But he didn't even know that my father was in England.
A singular case, eh, Holmes?
I haven't yet described to you the most singular part.
Well, then pray do so.
About 6 years ago, a notice appeared in the Times asking for the address of Miss Mary Morstan and stating that it would be to her advantage to come forward.
Oh, indeed. Do you happen to recall the precise date?
The 4th of May, 1882. Okay. Here is the cutting.
Oh, very good. Thank you.
By that date, I'd entered the family of Mrs. Cecil Forrester in the post of governess. On her advice, I published my address in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm. With what result?
The very same day, this box arrived in the post.
May I? Thank you.
Good heavens.
My reaction exactly.
I don't believe I've seen a more lustrous pearl.
Or a larger. It's beautiful.
Since then, every year upon the same date... Well, you can see for yourself.
That's fascinating.
I took them to an expert. They are exactly matched.
And of some considerable value.
Yes.
Yes, but it is not this which brings you to me, Miss Morstan. Something else has occurred, Something rather more disquieting than anonymous gifts.
You are correct, Mr. Holmes. This morning I received this letter. Perhaps you will read it for yourself.
Thank you. The envelope, too, please. Thank you. Yes, postmark London, Southwest, July the 7th. Man's thumb mark on corner, probably postman. Best quality paper. Envelopes, 6 months a packet. This particular man in his stationery. Watson.
No address. Be at the third pillar from the left outside the Lyceum Theatre tonight at 7 o'clock. If you are distrustful, bring two friends. You are a wronged woman and shall have justice. Do not bring police. Your unknown friend.
The same hand as the address on the pearl box. Well, this is a very pretty little mystery.
Well, what do you intend to do, Miss Morstan?
Well, that is exactly what I came to ask you. I shall be guided by your advice. And Mr. Holmes, of course.
Oh, we shall certainly go, Miss Morstan. You and I? But your correspondent says two friends, does he not?
He does.
Well then, let me think. You and I and... Why, Dr. Watson is the very man. He and I have worked together before.
Dr. Watson, would you come?
I shall be proud and happy if I can be of any service.
You are both very kind. If I'm here at 6, it will do, I suppose.
Well, you must not be later. Goodbye, Miss Morstan.
Until 6, then.
Please try to set your mind at rest.
I shall. Thank you, Dr. Watson.
Au revoir, Miss Morstan.
Au revoir.
What a very attractive woman.
Is she? I did not observe.
You really are an automaton, a calculating machine.
Watson!
Something positively inhuman about you at times.
Keep that thing away from me.
Watch your mouth, Smith. All right, Tonga. He doesn't like you, Smith, and no more do I.
I should be charging you double.
You've been well enough paid. Will she be ready?
How many times she'll be ready?
And you'll keep her out of sight till then.
Do you think I'm some kind of fool? Keep it away!
I was beginning to think that you were going to be late.
And you were looking forward to riding off alone with a decorative, Miss Morstan.
I thought you hadn't observed that.
Ooh, writing it up already, eh, Watson? More gems for your avid public? Her expression was sweet and amiable, and her large blue eyes were singularly spiritual and sympathetic. In an experience of women which extends over many nations and 3 separate continents, I have never...
If you say one word... I swear I walk out of the door.
Pour me some tea. There's a good fellow. You know, there's no great mystery in this matter.
What? You've solved it already?
No, that would be too much to say. I've discovered a suggestive fact, that's all.
Suggestive fact?
Well, actually, a very suggestive fact. Major John Sholto, late of the 34th Bombay Infantry... Thank you, Doctor. ...died on the 28th of April, 1882...
I may be very obtuse, Holmes, but I fail to see... No. No, wait a minute. Miss Morstan received her first pearl at the beginning of May that same year.
Within a week of the death of her father's only friend in England. Very suggestive. It's nearly 6. Be so good as to bring your heaviest stick.
You're anticipating danger?
I believe we are in for a serious night's work.
I have something else to show you, gentlemen. This is a paper which I found in Papa's things. I've always assumed that it was just another souvenir. But since it is a little out of the ordinary, I thought you might wish to see it.
Well, you certainly are a model clad. And this is paper of native Indian manufacture. It has at some time been pinned to a board. Your father evidently held it to be of some importance, for it's been kept carefully in a pocketbook.
Yes, that's where I found it.
One side's as clean as the other, drawn in pencil but almost faded.
When I first saw it, I thought it was a pattern, but it's actually a diagram or plan of some kind.
Matters Indian are the doctor's territory.
Thank you. I'm sure you're right, Miss Morstan. I'd say that this is a... plan of some large and complex building. Interesting, this cross in the centre, eh, Holmes?
And the words 337 from left.
I confess to being more intrigued by the inscription at the bottom.
Strange collection of names. Jonathan Small, Mohammed Singh, Abdullah Khan, Dost Akbar.
Yeah, one Westerner, 2 Mohammedans, and what about the 4th, Watson?
Oh, it's a sort of Mohammedan Sikh hybrid. Do you know any of these people, Miss Morstan?
I'm afraid not. Nor did my father ever mention them in his letters.
What about this symbol?
I've never seen anything like it anywhere else.
Why? 4 crosses in a line with their arms touching. And written through them...
The sign of the 4.
What do you suppose is going to happen, Mr. Holmes?
Patience, Miss Morstan.
It is pointless to speculate without data.
It's eerie, isn't it? Something ghost-like in the way the lights from the shop windows cut through the fog. People walk out of the gloom into the light, and then back into darkness again. It's a microcosm of all human life.
Oh, Watson, you're an incurable romantic.
I agree with the doctor. I hate these steamy, foggy nights.
It's past seven. I hope this whole thing isn't some kind of hoax.
I believe not. To your left, small, dark man, dressed as a coachman. He's been watching us carefully.
And here he comes.
Are you the parties who come with Miss Morstan?
I am, Miss Morstan. These two gentlemen are my friends.
You will excuse me, miss, but I was to ask you to give me your word that neither of your companions is a police officer.
I give you my word on that.
This way, please.
Look at it, Tonga. Look at it. After all this time.
Soon we'll be out of this damn place. We can live like kings. Like Maharajas, eh?
We've done it, Tonga. Vengeance for the four.
Where do you think he's taking us?
Our quest does not appear to lead us to very fashionable regions.
Fog's got thicker. I can't see a thing.
We're in Robsart Street.
Where's that?
South of the river. We crossed over Vauxhall Bridge, then turned into Wandsworth Road, then Priory Road, Larkhall Lane and Stockwell Place. Ah, now we're turning again Cold Harbour Lane.
Do you know every by street in London by heart, Mr. Holmes?
It's a hobby of mine.
We're stopping.
Dull brick houses. New, I think. Hardly any lights.
There's a door opening. Someone's coming. Good Lord. Do you see, Holmes?
I see.
What? Whatever is it?
Someone singularly incongruous for the inhabitant of a third-rate suburban dwelling house.
Good evening, Miss Morstan. Gentlemen, the Sahib awaits you.
Your servant, Miss Morstan. Your servant. Your servant, gentlemen. Welcome to my little sanctum. Thank you, Kitmutka.
Sahib.
A small place, Miss Morstan, but furnished to my own liking. An oasis of art in the howling deserts of South London.
It's beautiful.
It seemed to me that if I could not take myself to India, I could at least bring a little of India to me. Mr. Thaddeus Sholto, that is my name.
Sholto?
Quite so. You are Miss Morstan, of course. And these gentlemen?
Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
A doctor, eh? Mm. Have you your stethoscope? I have grave doubts as to my mitral valve. Might I ask you, would you have the kindness...
Mr. Sholto, this is hardly the time.
Perhaps not, perhaps not. Possibly later. You will excuse my anxiety, Miss Morstan. I'm a great sufferer and the heart is so vulnerable.
Mr. Sholto, why did you not simply ask Miss Morstan to come directly to this address? Why all the secrecy?
Because I feared she might bring unpleasant people with her. I am a man of retiring and refined taste. There is nothing more unaesthetic than a policeman. Quite. I seldom come into contact with the rough crowd. I live, as you see, with some little atmosphere of elegance around me. I may call myself a patron of the arts. It is my weakness. That landscape is a genuine coral.
You will excuse me, Mr. Sholto, but I am here at your request to learn something which you desire to tell me. It is very late, and I should desire the interview be as short as possible.
At the best, it must take some time, for we shall certainly have to go to Norwood.
To Norwood?
To see Brother Bartholomew. He is very angry with me for taking the course which I thought right. I had quite high words with him last night.
If we are to go to Norwood, it would perhaps be as well to start at once.
Oh, no! That would hardly do. I don't know what he would say if I brought you to him in that sudden way. No, I must prepare you first. Oh, yes.
Then pray do so.
Yes, yes, of course. Miss Morstan, I trust you have no objection to the balsamic odour of Eastern tobacco smoke? Oh, thank you. I am a little nervous and I find my hookah an invaluable sedative. Very well. My father was, as you may have guessed, Major John Sholto, once of the Indian Army. He retired some 11 years ago and came to live at Pondicherry Lodge in Upper Norwood. He had prospered in India and brought back with him considerable wealth, a large collection of valuable curiosities and a staff of native servants. We lived in great luxury. We came to realize that some mystery, some positive danger overhung our father. He was very fearful of going out alone and was greatly distrustful of strangers. On one occasion, he actually fired his revolver at a wooden-legged man, a harmless tradesman. We had to pay a large sum to hush the matter up. Early in 1882, my father received a letter from India.
My God!
What is it, Father?
Bad news?
Father! He had suffered for years from an enlarged spleen. But after this attack, he grew rapidly worse. And from that day, he sickened to his death.
What was in the letter?
I do not know.
Mr. Sholto?
Truly. At the moment of the attack, we were too occupied to read it. And afterward, my father ordered it destroyed.
Please carry on, Mr. Sholto.
Yes. After a few months, my brother and I were informed that my father was beyond all hope and that he wished to make a last communication to us.
Bartholomew, Thaddeus.
We are here, Father.
I have only one thing which weighs on my mind at this supreme moment. Something I have never told you. When we were in India together, my friend, Captain Morstan, and I came into possession of a considerable treasure.
Treasure?
I have brought it back with me here to England.
Here? You brought it to this house?
Bartholomew.
Yes. When Morstan returned home, he came straight here to claim his share. We had a difference of opinion and exchanged heated words. Morstan's heart was weak, and his anger was too great for it to bear. He died.
Father.
Are you all right, Miss Morstan?
Yes. Yes, Doctor. I knew in my heart that he was dead.
I can give you every information. And what is more, I can do you justice. And will too. Whatever Brother Bartholomew may say.
Never mind your information. Why was this not reported to the authorities?
I cannot say.
Mr. Sholto, what was the nature of this difference of opinion?
My father did not tell us.
What became of Major Morstan's body?
I do not know.
Your father, sir, behaved in an appalling fashion.
Yes, yes, I'm afraid he did. Perhaps if I had been there... But Brother Bartholomew and I were away at university.
Did Major Sholto tell you anything more about my father?
By this time he was extremely weak. He spoke only of you.
Of me?
You, my sons, you must find Morstan's daughter, his orphan. The cursed greed which has been my besetting sin through life has kept from her what is rightfully hers. Half, at least, of the treasure belongs to that girl. Thaddeus, give me that case.
Yes, Father.
Show me that.
No.
I got that necklace out with the design of sending it to her. But I could not bear to part with it.
These pearls must be worth a fortune.
It is not one thousandth part of the whole. Swear to me that Morstan's daughter will have her fair share.
I swear. Where is this treasure?